My toilet's a part of a Russian botnet, so... Shop Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show podcast, all about blips and blorts and smart homes. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hey, I thought you were gonna have a clever, like, here's Chris,
Amazon Dash Button Coyer.
Yeah,
have you tried the Amazon Dash Button? Amazon is not sponsoring the show, but they should. Amazon Dash, get your product today.
There we go. That's what I was expecting.
That's what you wanted. Okay. We had a week off, so
we have a couple of guests on this episode to talk about something kind of awesome that certainly neither Dave or I are experts on, and so we'll see where this conversation leads. With us is Kianush Purian. Did I get that right? Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic.
Thanks for having us.
VP at a place. What's it called? What do you do?
I'm vice president of Spiria, the Boston headquarters.
Cool. And so we'll get into that in a minute, and works with you, Mr. Dale Sandy. How you doing, Dale?
Hey, Chris. I'm doing great. Thanks for having us on the show, man.
Sure. And it was kind of, it came out of a quick Twitter conversation with you about, like, I don't know, have you seen this stuff? Are you excited about this stuff? Because it sounds like you are. And by that stuff, I mean the glorious acronym IoT, or Internet of Things. Maybe we ought to start with, to set the tone and stage and all that stuff, what the heck does that mean, and why are y'all involved with it?
That is a great question. But I want to be sure to throw this back to Keanders quickly, as he is the one who's pretty much started a business around this. But sure, you know, IoT is just that. It's the bringing together of internet and all the interconnected things that can be put on the internet. And, you know, this can range wildly in application, you know, ranging from in-home devices and accessories to large-scale enterprise applications for commercial shipping, warehousing, and manufacturing. And, you know, just think of all the things that we interact with on a daily basis, and then think about how those things could be smarter to help us.
So we all think of the internet-connected toaster, right? Or I guess...
Right. I mean, I was just about to say that as well, is, you know, many people jump to the idea of making any appliance like a toaster internet smart, and that's just really scratching the surface of, you know, what's really going on in this space. There's so much opportunity and so much that has been done to get us to this point.
I'm sure there is. Like, it's easy to make fun of, and it's already affecting your life.
Right. You know, and like I said, you know, I want to give this back to Kianush, and I let, you know, kind of let him answer the question too.
Kianush, so there's money in this, huh?
Well, as an example of IoT, don't forget the famous example of the microwave with cameras in it, right?
Oh, good. Yes.
So yeah, IoT to me, like, I have these conversations with a lot of people when they ask me, what do you do? I say, yeah, we build IoT devices, and they look like, oh, I know what you're talking about. And I was like, well, what do you think IoT means to you? And every time I've talked to people about that, it's different definitions with different people. So it to us personally, it goes a little bit beyond a smart device. So we think of IoT as an ecosystem that is a product that is smart enough to not only maintain itself, but also has sensors that it can look at its environment. Mm-hmm. And with those sensors, it gathers data. So there's a huge data aspect to it. What do you do with all that data that's being gathered? A Nest thermostat that sits around and looks at when you're home, when you're not home, what the temperature outside is, what the temperature inside is. It senses the different rooms and says, okay, all your rooms should be this temperature and things like that. Then mm-hmm. there's,
so is the Nest kind of a kind of a good example of a good IoT device?
Yes. A Nest thermostat would be a good example of that. A Fitbit is a good example of that. With these examples, as you look at them, you'll see the product itself has a user interface. And then there's also the connectivity aspect of it. How are you connecting to this? You obviously, there's a touch connect to it where you go to the actual physical thermostat, but there's also connectivity through the internet. You're away from home. You went on vacation. You forgot to turn off your thermostat. You just go on your phone or go on a website and say, hey, turn my thermostat down.
So that's the I part, I guess, of IoT.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the I part is, if you think about it, it's all that stuff. So the data part of it is also the mm-hmm. internet part of it, because the sensors, the Nest thermostat is also smart enough to know, hey, I don't see any activity around your home. I'm most likely, if you have the right settings, it's going to say, okay, if there's no activity, I'm going to shut myself down to a normal temperature instead of maintaining a high temperature. And then with that also comes the little bit of the scary part of IoT, which is the security side of things. A Nest thermostat that knows when you are or are not home, can be hacked, and somebody can know when you are or are not home, so they can, they can do some malicious things there.
I was gonna say, my toilet's a part of a Russian botnet, so it's very timely.
Right. I mean, like Keanu's just talking about, the Nest thermostat is pretty awesome, and its awareness of my home is pretty awesome. But there's a feature that I find a little annoying that, when the Nest app is installed on my phone and my phone knows where I am all the time, then the Nest can use that data to know when I'm home or away. And it knows when I'm getting close to home and will automatically kick in the heat to warm up my home when I get there. So yeah, I mean, that kind of data is super sensitive, and if used maliciously, it could lead to all kinds of like really bad things. And same thing goes with IoT and home locks. I was pretty jacked for a while for getting a smart lock, and then I learned about some security hacks. And if someone is actually able to hack the signal that opens my locks, well, I mean, that is, the road to all kinds of bad things.
It's kind of been a classic thing for a while. I mean, maybe it's more painful now because an IoT device might be really accurate. Like I know for sure there's nobody home because that's what my sensors are built to do. But it seems similar to me as that, like back in the day, you could sign into Foursquare and be like, I'm over at the Brown Owl Hamburger Emporium. And that was public data, and be like, okay, so they checked in at the Brown Owl. I guess I'll go rob their house. That's what everybody was worried about. But just because I checked in at the Brown Owl Burger Emporium doesn't mean that there's nobody home. But an IoT device knows that right. There's nobody home.
But I don't think so part of what we do with our education side of things is that we don't want to let these dark side of this IoT impede its evolution. So we concentrate on all these aspects as we're creating a device, and security is in every aspect as we go through it. It's on the top of our list.
They use HTTPS. It's fine.
Well, yeah.
There you go.
Well, I mean, our
crypto. Right. It's crypto. It works. It's flawless.
So our experience, we started out with medical devices. And with medical devices, you have your class 1, 2, and 3, which are different categorization of it, but all of these require FDA approval and HIPAA compliance in some aspects. And so we have created products that are compliant with all these different stringent measures, and security is a huge thing, especially when it comes to patient data and stuff like that. So what we've done, we've taken those measures, and whether we're creating a dog collar on an invisible fence that that senses where your dog is in the yard. We've taken those security measures and applied it to a simple consumer device like that.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm actually looking at buying one of those things. I didn't even know there was like IoT versions of a dog fence, or it maybe just works as a good example. But I think that's fascinating. Like, maybe we could we like knock off a checklist of different interesting IoT devices just to like seed the listener's mind a little bit. Like, so you've made, we've talked about Nest, we talked about cheesy examples, but what are like cool examples? What have y'all built? You know, what was this medical device?
So I can talk about it in general terms. I can't talk about it in specific.
I'm sure. Yeah.
one of the things that it was around was a telemedicine product where it went into ambulances. And as the paramedics are taking vitals of the patient and on their way to the hospital, to the emergency room, these vitals are transmitted to the doctors. So the doctors know a whole lot of information before the patient arrives. Sure. That way they don't have to ask the simplest questions. They know what their blood pressure is like, what the injury is, where what their status is, and all that stuff. So that was one of the things that was really interesting to us. And that transmission of data was super, super secure and super important.
Yeah. Well, what else?
Let's see. I'm trying to go through the list of we created a catheter that goes into blood vessels and it does an imaging of inside of a blood vessel. So what? If there's any
an IoT catheter.
Yeah. So you know.
I mean, I think we've all done that, like a hack project. You know, little weekend.
A little IoT suppository.
Yeah, I think we've all. Oh, I could have gone really blue. I guess dash buttons and things like that fall into this category too, right? Kind of. Like any kind of like internet connected machine, is that like that is not a phone or a desktop, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, imagine a world. I mean, we've already imagined this where you wake up and your refrigerator squeezes the oranges for you and creates the orange juice, and your coffee maker makes your coffee and your toaster makes your toaster and all that stuff. You know, if all those are connected and they know what your preferences are, they'll be able to create all that for you. And you just come downstairs, have your breakfast and go.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it only big now? Like, is it because like the componentry to make connectivity has gotten a bunch cheaper or something? Like, why are we so early in this thing? I mean, the internet's new, but it's not that new.
A lot of it comes around infrastructure, right? And there's been a lot of infrastructure being built over the past few years that is necessary in order to basically facilitate this internet of things kind of thing. And, you know, so it's more and more tools are becoming more accessible to people in order to basically create these smarter type devices. I mean, even just Apple in their latest WWDC thing unveiled like huge new opportunities with their Apple HomeKit platform. And, and the thing that's interesting to me about internet devices or IoT devices and stuff is there's an amazing amount of complexity that has to be put into creating a physical device that relies on a virtual universe, right? I mean, there's a lot of work that also had to be done too into basically rethinking these interfaces for all of these different devices that we're working with. Because, I mean, going to a regular example of a light switch that is, you know, works on and off by the internet. I mean, when you come home and you have a physical switch that up is on and down is off or whatever, but you control that light from the internet. So now you basically potentially switch which direction is on and off. You know, it's kind of like the annoying light switches in your house where there's two light switches for one light. You never know which way is on or off until you flip the switch. So, you know, the experience with these devices had to be rethought. And so, you know, people have been putting time into that as well. And there's been a lot of, you know, new ideas that started up years ago, because there was already like a whole home hub manufacturer that I don't remember who it was that did it, but they did like a whole home solution, and then they ended up getting bought out by somebody else. And then part of that buyout was that they had to immediately deprecate all of their pre-existing hardware. So if you had invested in their entire thing, it all got shut down. So we quickly discovered that those were the wrong directions to go with IoT devices in the home space. And so, I mean, I guess to kind of answer your question, Chris, it's, you know, it's becoming a really, really popular discussion right now in a lot of different things, because I feel that there is a certain level of maturity that we've gotten to with, you know, with the individual devices that go in the home and the platforms from which they're going to run on. And we have a few years of people making really, really bad mistakes in this space too. I mean, like, all of us have gone, you know, I can't say all of us, but a lot of us who are like nerdy into this thing have gone out and gotten like the first generation of IoT devices and tried to do this setup. And it's like, it's a freaking nightmare.
Well, here's an example. I have a scale that, you know, you stand on it, you know, and it weighs you. And then it's internet connected, I guess, you know, because I buy it, I bring it home, I put some batteries in it, and I set it on the floor, and it's like, it won't even tell you how much you weigh until you hook it up to your router, you know? And you so you get it.
I mean, that in itself, yeah, that is an interesting user experience situation, because there has to be a certain amount of logic you put into the device itself without the device being too, what's the word I'm looking for, like overly dependent on its own. Because, I mean, there's a balance, because the more controls you put into a device, the harder it is for you to upgrade anything, right? Because it's, you know, it's like, oh, you have to.
I think in this case, it was paired with, you had to download an app too on your phone. Because otherwise, how to, because I don't want to, you'd think that the cost of the scale would balloon way up if it had to ship with a little keyboard to type in your password or something. So it's like, I can see what you mean by infrastructure a little bit, is now that everybody has a phone that's internet connected as well, that now I can have this device and I can do all the like complicated setup stuff from the phone and not need to build that into the device itself. I also have this thing that you put on your keychain that like reports its location back to my phone, so that if I lose the keys, my phone knows the last time they were together or something and tells it where it is. But both of those things are totally dependent on me having a pretty intelligent phone for it to go with, which I guess is a, I don't know, a mini category of these things. Because not all IoT devices require a phone, I'm sure.
No. I mean, not all. There's like we were saying, there's multiple components that are part of it. I mean, some of them, there's a lot of IoT stuff, work to be done out there, where there's a ton of custom software and custom interfaces that has to be all developed in order to fit the product model that company is trying to deliver.
Do you get into that stuff? Because this is the ultimate question here. Like, why are you two fellas on this podcast? You're both have a history in web design and development, do you not? Like, where does that, like, when you are designing an interface for an IoT device.
Yeah, how do you go from website to catheter? That's probably the journey map I want to hear.
Is there a Ruby on there? Can you process SAS on this catheter?
I mean, I guess the draw for me personally is, you know, yes, I have spent a lot of my career in doing front end development, but a lot of that was also paired with user experience design. And I think there's a huge opportunity for user experience inside of this IoT space as well. You know, and that's the area that really interests me as well, is that, you know, when we're talking about this interpolarity between devices, you have an app on your phone and you have a physical device in the house, and how do these things work in concert within that space? How do these things work in concert with other things around you? What is the experience for setting them up, and what is the experience for keeping them going? You know, I mean, there's, it kind of brings a whole new perspective on user experience when it's no longer just the user interfacing with the computer. It's a user interfacing with a physical device via the computer.
So it's the UX stuff that kind of brought you over. It keeps
that's what draws me. I mean, I can't speak for Kianush, but yeah, that's what makes it super interesting.
What do you think, Kianush? Well, what was your web stuff to this stuff transition, or is there a transition?
I was always interested in the user experience, whether it was on the web or not. And in some aspects, I was always frustrated with technology and how it was evolving, and how it, like, for example, right now, this has nothing to do with IoT, but we work with a publishing company, and one frustration that I have with publishing companies is when they create an iPad version of their magazine, it's just the print version of that magazine on an iPad. And my question to them has always been, is why are you not using all the tool sets that are within the iPad for you when it comes to video, when it comes to sound, when it comes to, it is, although it's a 2D platform, it does have a third dimension to it. Why are we not using that third dimension of it? So when it comes to user experience, I always wanted to take that over to and use it to the nth degree. Mm-hmm. And with IoT devices, the user experience goes beyond the touch and feel of the device. It, as Dale said, it comes with the moment you open up, you open it up out of the box. One of the examples that I use is that Steve Jobs had told all his people that the iPhones or the iPods that go out to people, they should be fully charged, so that when they open them up and they take it out of the box, all they have to do is hit the start button and they're ready to go. Up until that point, what did we have to do? We had to install batteries. We had to plug it in. We had to charge it. And that immediate user experience was not there. So taking that user experience and in all the different aspects of a product, in the connectivity with multiple devices, making sure the UI, for example, on my mobile device is similar to the UI that's on the physical device or the web application that we create for it, making sure that the data that comes out of it, although it's not, the data is not user, it's in front of all users, but it's in front of a user, whether it's a developer or a data analyst that is analyzing that data, making sure that's user friendly. And eventually we're going to take that data and we're going to put it in a dashboard somewhere that gives you all these different things. For example, we created a invisible fence, one of those invisible fence dog collars, where it gathered data for where the dog was, in the yard, where the dog was.
This is a real thing. Okay, go on.
This is a real thing, yeah. Where the dog was challenging the fence. And so if there's any weak points in the fence, it would let the user know. So, or where, if the dog escaped, where the dog escaped from. Wow. So those are the things that, that we look at when we're creating the user experience, goes beyond just what the user physically touches.
Oh, you think that's hilarious, you know? You, like, get a notification on your phone that, like, shows you a little dot in your yard, and you look over there, and there's, like, a ladder set up. Oh, damn it. I should have used my eyeball.
Because that's how they do it.
But one of the things, I'm sorry, you guys were talking about, so the reason IoT is picking up right now, it's come a long way, but it's pretty much still at the very beginning, and it's got room for evolving. The example that I use is when the iPhone came out, everybody wanted to create an app for the iPhone. Like, and we ended up getting a bunch of fart apps, just, you know, people just creating fart noises with apps, you know, and
I know a guy who like makes a lot of apps on everything. Yeah, go ahead.
So we're beyond the fart apps in the IoT world, but we're at the very beginning of it and there's room for it. And the other thing is, I don't think people understand where you can insert this technology. We talked to one of these big box stores, you know what I mean, like Costco and
right.
BJ's and all that. We talked to one of them about it, and they're doing a lot of stuff around their software and e-commerce platform and things like that. But what we talked to them about was, well, why not have some sensors in your actual stores that tells you, you know how you got your shelves where you can pick your products, but you have other shelves that has inventory. And if paper towels run out, they go to some aisle, bring that beep beep ladder, go up, bring it down and stuff like that. I don't know if you've ever had the problem of trying to find something, you can't find it. You go get one of the clerks and say, hey, can you get me some of this? And they have to go figure out where the paper towels are. So we're like, well, why don't you have some sensors that says you have X amount of paper towel crates and it's located right here. And you can just have an iPad that opens it up and says, yeah, I have paper towels. This is on this aisle. I'm going to go get it for you and bring it down. So
it's helping the store owners because they can be like, oh, there's no more Captain Crunch on this aisle. Like, somebody should be alerted so they can put some more Captain Crunch out. And there might even be a sensor on the ones in the back, too, that says, we're totally out of Captain Crunch. We should probably order some from our distributor. I can imagine there right. being a sensor on the front door that's like, there's 58 people in the store, but only 3 cashiers. You should probably put some more cashiers on. As long as that stuff is affordable enough, I could imagine that being extremely useful in a retail.
Right. Right. Exactly. And you know what Amazon's doing with Amazon Go, with the fact that you can just walk into a store, grab whatever you want to walk out and you'll get charged for it. I mean, that concept.
Have you done, isn't it in Seattle? Have you done it, Dale?
I have not done it yet because they've only just opened it to the public. For the longest time, it was only available to Amazon employees, but that's even kind of an interesting model too, because other grocery stores are starting to basically embrace that concept too of, you know, the total self-fulfillment shopping experience. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, shelves being aware of what's happening and collecting all of that data about how product is moving through the store.
First, you have to put your IoT suppository in when you go through the store. And then if you steal anything and you leave, you don't want to know, but it's not good.
Catheter really set the mood for this episode.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by HelloSign. That's HelloSign.com/ShopTalk, which is where you want to go for the discount, of course. HelloSign helps companies grow revenue faster by automating document workflows within a developer-friendly e-signature API that makes it simple to embed secure and legally binding signatures into any website. So you need to collect signatures on documents. You can do that. That's what your customers expect, frankly. And they're legally binding, and you can bring that experience onto your own site with their API. So the API is always free during development, which I love that, because it's like, you know, you can play with this thing as much as you want with full functionality in development. Get it how you want it, and then you decide you're going to go with it. Go into production, that's when you start paying for it, which is great. Developers can send a first API call in minutes, and the app certification is free. So you just, it's just, you won't find an e-signature product with an easier path to implementation. There's tons of docs, there's tons of features, there's a really nice dashboard for it all. It's twice as fast as any other e-signature API, and all this code that you get to implement it for free. It's just, there's code to do that with. So the URL again is hellosign.com/shoptalk. That gets you 33% off new users and business plans. So check them out. HelloSign's awesome. So is a lot of this stuff web-based, though? Like, so I have a sensor, and it tells me I'm out of Captain Crunch. Does it communicate via HTTP? Does it make like an AJAX request, or is it like, is there different protocols involved, or is it Bluetooth, or like, do y'all even care? You know, do you just use whatever makes the most sense, or is there a standard?
Well, it depends on the connectivity that you need. So Bluetooth is one of them. RFID is another one. There's a concept called LoRa, which is long range, low power wireless connectivity. The one aspect that you really, really have to consider when creating an IoT device is, how often you need this connectivity to happen, especially if, the device is not tethered to a power supply. Power management is very important. So
I suppose, right. You don't want your sensors running out of juice.
Right. I mean, Fitbit being an example of that, you want your Fitbit to last the whole day and not just you have to charge it every 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So the amount of time that you use batteries on that, or you do connectivity, and connectivity is a huge issue. So if we were going to take that dog collar that keeps track of your dog and expand it into, for example, livestock. Let's say we want to expand that and put it on cows, and therefore the rancher can know where its cows are at all times.
Would you do solar? Could you do that?
You could do that. The other thing, for example, with cows, since they are bigger, you can afford to have a bigger device, so you can have a bigger battery on those.
Oh, I see. Because that cow don't care. It could weigh 3 pounds. I mean, it.
Right. So
also those, methane. Those are, have you seen this? Not to keep bringing up butts, but my God, they could be methane powered.
Right. Anyway, but for example, with RFID, you can have radio frequencies that you can keep them within a contained area, and within those radio frequencies, you can know where they are. So there's different methods of connectivity. It just depends on.
Gosh, that's fascinating. Like in a grocery store, it's like fine, hook into the router. It's fairly consistent. You could probably even plug them in. If they're on cows, that's a whole nother situation. If it's in an ambulance, that's a whole other situation, which affects both power and connectivity.
Well, IoT in agriculture is huge. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there that are doing things with, you know, putting an array of sensors throughout a farm field to constantly, you know, pay attention to the wellness of the soil, and if it needs water, if it needs nutrients, or if it needs pesticides, and kind of creating a new super, super efficient future.
I like that it's keeping track of your animals. So it's kind of like saying that you're the new cowboys is what I'm hearing.
Well, there's that.
That's right.
With this technology, it sounds like I could also LoJack my kid Is that, that's also something I could do?
I think they already, yeah, they already have that. I've seen, there's a watch you can wear, and the parents have a similar device or a similar watch, I think, and it connects, just the two of those devices connect to each other. And I think it has a range of about 2 to 3 miles. So it kind of, once you activate it, it searches for the other watch and it tells you which direction to go to get closer to it. So
it's replacing Liam Neeson's job too.
No one's safe in the okay, I have kind of technical, getting a little more technical in the back half of the show here. To what languages do you work in, you know, and what tools, like platforms? I know like there's Arduinos and Feathers and all these kind of it's a whole different world of like hardware, and then it's kind of how, what are you programming in? I know kind of Arduino is kind of a Python thing, I think. But how are you programming your IoT devices?
Okay. So before I get into that, there's one thing I have to explain that's a little bit different when it comes to software development and hardware development. So the issue with hardware development is that the process of developing it takes longer. Depending on the complexity, it can take 1 to 2 years to develop a product. And the reason behind that is that once it's created and once it's released out to the market, it has to work well. It's not like a software you put out there and oops, it has a security risk, I'm going to send an update to it. If the actual physical product does not work well, it will leave a bad experience and people will stop using it. And in our cases, a medical device, it might kill somebody. So, right.
So you almost have like one shot. I mean, not like, you kind of have to develop in the mindset, like no one's going to update this thing. We have contingencies to update the things, but like, let's just assume it never connects to a Wi-Fi or something. Is that kind of how you operate, or?
Right. There's a physical aspect of it, and then there's the software aspect of it, the firmware or software, whatever you want to call it. So the firmware can be updated if connected to the internet. The actual physical product. So if your Fitbit watch, there's something in the battery management of it doesn't work. If it can be fixed by software update, yeah, great. But if it is some sort of wiring that was not tested correctly, then you're in big doo-doo. You have to recall the whole thing, right?
It's not totally different than the not so long ago past of when you shipped software on CDs or something and that it had to be super right because you don't even have a chance to do a software update. It just is what it is.
True. Yeah. Yep. But then when it comes to the platforms that is used, so what we specialize in are Linux-based platforms. And the reason behind that is because it gives you quite a bit of flexibility and it's lightweight and it allows for quick turnaround and it doesn't consume too much space. Now, on the other side, that's the firmware, the actual software that can go on there. It can be a multitude of things. It can be anything from Node.js to Python to pretty much anything you can think of. If there is a user interface, then you can possibly create a browser-based product if you wanted to, if the user interface is big enough to do that.
Is that common or not? It seems like, I don't know, the web is pretty big, so I don't know, I guess it just 100% depends, but is it common that there's some kind of web component to?
Well, it depends again with the storage space that you have. If a web browser is heavy and it needs a lot of space and you don't have that much, then you can kind of extricate that and you can directly just create a user interface using using direct software if you want to. But mm-hmm. it depends on the product itself.
A lot of it kind of depends on, you know, like the flexibility of the model, because there's a lot of examples out there of where they built complete interfaces into the hardware itself. And, you know, like we're all talking here, is like once you have the hardware, unless there's a specific reason for you to upgrade all of the hardware, you're going to stay with the hardware for a long time. And we want people to stay with the hardware for a long time, because if they don't, then that just creates more garbage for the planet, right? And then these devices, you know, they consist of like toxic materials for the most part. So, you know, I see more of a trend myself of seeing devices that are just kind of like the device itself, where, like Keanu was just talking about, I mean, you basically have your firmware, of which the firmware is able to be updated via Wi-Fi or something like that, which could enable that device for some additional feature work. But putting all the interface into either an iOS app or a browser app or some other type of device that would interact with that, then that leaves you a much larger area of traditional software development for interfacing with that particular device. And then upgrades and advances and all that things, you know, I'll still kind of play in that arena.
Because then that device kind of triggers the deploy to update the smartphone or the app triggers like a firmware.
Yes. Right. Cause I have like, internet based light switches around my house, and every so often I get a little alert that says that, you know, we've updated the firmware. And so then I just run a little process and my phone communicates directly to the device and it updates the device. And then my lights still work again.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you by Netlify. Have y'all seen Netlify yet? Have you really like gone and given it a play? It's pretty darn cool. That's, you know, netlify.com. And it's static site hosting, although as they like to say, it's static hosting, you know, and way more. The idea is that, like, for one thing, I see tweets all the time. People are like super impressed with this, how Netlify handles basically deployment of getting your code over to them for the hosting, which is one, there's a CLI tool and some people are just super comfortable with that, you know, working in a folder full of stuff and you're just like, I just want to zoom it live. Brrr, boom, it's gone. You know, like having a command for that is so great. But also just, you might just be a Git developer. Like so many of us work on our projects that are have a Git repo associated with them. And if you basically push to master, push to some branch that you've told Netlify to watch, that can instantly go live as well, which just makes sense, doesn't it? Shouldn't your Git flow, where you're already like punching up files and branching and doing all that stuff, shouldn't that be part of your deployment flow? Of course it is. Netlify does that, of course. You know, that's one of the default ways you set up a new site, and Netlify is like, okay, well, what Git repo is it? We'll watch that. We'll deploy when necessary. And there's so many features that go around that. That's just the tip of the iceberg. But these tweets are kind of like, oh, I get it. This is like website deployment that somebody really thought about. They like designed it. And it feels like about time. Like, of course, this is what web hosts should be doing for us. Every web host in the world, I feel like, should just be like, oh, you want to put files on the hosting that you bought from us? What repo should we watch? You know? And it should be all configurable and all that stuff too, but it just seems like no-brainer grade. And it works particularly well, of course, in this world of static hosting, in which it's not, the hosting isn't like trying to spin up a Rails server for you or any of that stuff. It's just like static files stuff. But that works so great, and because it's fast as heck and secure as heck and all that. But there's other features too. So I'll shut up in a second here. But one of them is just like, let's say you have a form on the site. Well, it's just static hosting, so it can't really process that form. Oh, but it can. You just put the Netlify attribute on it. Netlify will handle all the form processing for you. So just one example. Check out Netlify. Super cool.
The future. Let's talk about the future. It should be easy. In the year 3000, you want to buy a new light bulb, but the light bulb startup you bought your light bulbs from went under or got bought by Facebook. And so now you have to buy a new smart bulb and you plug it in and it doesn't work with your app. So you have to download a special app to update one light bulb. Like, are we building a terrible future, or do at some point standards kick in and creates a light bulb interface protocol or something, you know, like,
you know. Yeah, no, you nailed this. I mean, Kianush and I were actually just talking about this the other day, and I kind of went on a slight tweet storm about this as well. Is the state of things right now is interesting because different devices don't cross over networks, right? So I have a Nest thermostat of which will never talk to my iOS device because Google bought Nest and Google is now going to integrate Nest into their Google devices. You know, so it's like immediately because of product preference of my phone, I am not going to really have that integrated experience that I could potentially have if the Nest device were to play nicely with the Apple HomeKit, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing going with the Ring, like the Ring doorbell and Ring cams. Again, this works. They've done an amazing job of creating a very awesome experience when you're inside of the Ring bubble. Step outside the Ring bubble. Now I have to use different apps and there's no interpolarity and there's nothing talking to each other and I can't put Nest into my Apple HomeKit app and
Internet of Things neutrality doesn't have quite their.
Yeah. You almost need that.
Yeah. And so exactly like you're saying, you know, it's in my opinion, and Kianush is one who said this the other day, was that, the Internet of Things is like the web of 1998. Mm-hmm. Right. We have a great underlining infrastructure. We have a great series of technologies that are available to us, but how we're bringing these things to market is not really the greatest way possible with the consumer in mind because everything lives in its own little ecosystem.
So we should be extra wary if Google came out tomorrow and said like, hey, Internet of Things is so great. We have actually like a new protocol that's really cool that you should all use to build these Internet of Things devices, you should all be like, nah.
Well, that's exactly what everybody's doing. Because Alexa has a protocol in order for you to integrate IoT devices into the Amazon Alexa
ecosystem. They want you in, ecosystem is the right word, right? They want you. And if they use a proprietary format, then they got you.
And I was shopping for TVs the other day and it, you know, it's like Alexa compatible, you know.
Well, that is the thing. I mean, we're kind of living in a new world of like before when we had to buy software, you had to buy Mac or PC version, right? So now we're buying light switches and toaster ovens that are going to be either Apple HomeKit or Google or Alexa mm-hmm. compatible. The other side of that coin as well is, you know, do I really want to, in order for like my kitchen of the future all to use the same app, I have to buy like all LG or all Samsung products, right? In order for my toaster to talk to my oven, which talks to my microwave, which talks to my refrigerator.
Yes, they want this. I think big companies want to fight it out.
I think they do. But I think, you know, Dave, you hit the nail on the head of standards. I mean, I think that's one of the battles that are put in front of us is coming up with a standard communication model from which any device can talk to any application and you're not overly dependent on the HomeKit platform, the Alexa platform, or the Google mm-hmm. platform.
It's almost like you almost invent classes of devices or something. Like,
it's a lesson that they could take from the web. The web did this so well.
over the course of 20, 30 years.
Yeah, over the course of 20 years, and a lot of people who aged horribly fast, you know, and there was an amazing amount of stress that went into web standardization. And so I mean, IoT is definitely going to go through that mm-hmm. that exact same birthing process, I believe, as well.
It does annoy me. This is I have an Apple TV at home, which I love because I don't know what other better systems are out there, but it's just Roku. It's got all the stuff on it.
Roku. Really?
My Xbox. Roku. Maybe Let's Xbox. But I find the Roku interface is very... just much jankier in comparison.
Bloop, bloop, bloop,
I had a Roku for. I tried to switch to Roku. I couldn't handle it. I need smooth, baby. I need smooth.
Go indie, anyway, dude. Go indie.
You know me. I'm the least indie guy there is. Anyway, and then, but I have an Alexa too, which I quite like, you know? It was just, you know, I ask Alexa all kinds of crap. And it, but when you have them both in the same room, I know I took this as a tangent that has nothing to do with anything, but it's stupid that I can't just be like, TV, play Sesame Street. It won't, yeah. It's not listening. And this, Apple, the Siri on the Apple TV is fine, but it should just be listening like everything else is.
Well, I mean, that is another interesting thing about user experience is that throughout my house, I'm like saying, hey, Alexa, hey, Siri.
We have a Google. Hey, Cortana. We have an OK Google thing, too.
Do you get them mixed up? Like you have multiple kids like Susan, Jeff, whatever your name is. Play Vengabus.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think that's a ludicrous world, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, we all want to walk into, like, you know, our ready room on the Starship Enterprise and say, computer, Earl Grey hot, right? And but now we're going in there and saying, like, gee, which, who does my Earl Grey maker? Which room am I in? Oh, that's Hey Google.
All right.
You know, and it's like, oh no, it's not. Hey Google, it's you know. So it's yeah, it's the world. I can easily say this: the way my house is set up right now, that if I were to get hit by a bus tomorrow, the first thing my wife would do is throw all this crap off the street.
Yeah,
you know, like take your all your internet devices and throw them away. I don't care.
No, that's one of the reasons I don't really like invest heavily because I just you know, yeah, I don't. Want to like outfit my whole house with $30 light bulbs and then all of a sudden that company goes under or like, you know, I don't know, the API breaks or something. So that
let's
worries
get Dave
me.
Set up here at the end of the show, right? Like okay. Dave, you got free time. You're in, you have every hobby there is to have. Why not make Internet of Things a hobby as you too? I think, you know, like maybe you even wrote this and you're like, what's a hello world for IoT? Can Dave rock a little IoT device this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, you can pick up an Arduino, you can make a light flash for like 2 seconds at a time intervals. It's It's very simple to do.
Aid, you were picking on the buttons before, Chris. AWS has generic buttons you can buy. They're like $25 a pop. And you can wire those into the AWS Cloud Internet of Things platform. And if you have a compatible device, air quotes, then you could basically hook your button up to flipping on and off light switches or whatever you want to hook that up to.
Why is a button $25? Is it just because it's real? Is it a really nice button?
It's an Internet of Things button. Come on, Chris. It's a magic button.
Cloud-enabled button.
Oh, I see. It's got, does it has like Wi-Fi stuff in it or something?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Amazon had the, you know, like the product buttons that like, you know, you can put a Tide button next to your washing machine. So when you're out of washing stuff, you just press the button and then a guy shows up in your door in 15 minutes with a new bottle of Tide, right?
Does anybody actually have one of those things? All of the four of us?
I've seen them. I've actually seen them like in apartment buildings or areas where stuff needs to be there for the customers.
Okay. All the time. One question then. How do you know for sure that it worked?
You get 200 rolls of toilet paper when your kids find the button in the bathroom.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
But anyway, yeah. So you can buy the generic button and then that can actually be a first step into creating your first IoT device.
Here's the thing I want to do. Can I, and you guys kind of walk me through it. Free training. I want to make like an on-air light, like so my kids and wife don't bust into my office when I'm recording a podcast, say. You know, what would that involve? Like, I guess like a button of some kind that is connected to a light of some kind that has an Arduino or something in it. Right. How would I do that? And then could I even make it smarter to where like Maybe there's an app on my computer running and it knows if I'm on a Skype call or a Zoom call or whatever, it could just automatically do that. Is that in the realm of possibility?
Oh yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's yeah. I mean,
this is patented, by the way. No one steal it.
I mean, yeah, I mean, there's light switches. I mean, there's outlets you can buy that you can basically, you know, you just plug it into the wall and then anything that you plug into that is now an internet enabled device.
So like, nice. Okay. So I just, any light bulb I could just plug that into that smart.
Yeah. And you can go, right. And you can go on, IFTTT? And then you can program it that every time you start a Skype call, it automatically goes to that Wemo device or smart device.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of amateur ways to like cobble things together to make them happen. The if that then this protocol is pretty interesting to play with. The only issue that I ever had with it is that it's not. And this is actually kind of a big deal with Internet of Things too, is time latency. Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be kind of cool that if I hooked up my Ring doorbell to my Wemo lights, that if somebody rang the doorbell, that it would turn the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
And it does do that, but there's literally like a 2 minute.
Delay. 2 minutes.
Yeah. Kind of like the late text message effect, right? Like,
right. So it's just kind of like if some random stranger is ringing on my doorbell and if they stand there for 2 minutes, it finally appears like I got off the couch.
Oh my God. What is it? Generate an RSS feed? And
yeah, I don't know. But I mean, I could never get that instant effect that I was hoping to get. So there's definitely ways to cobble things together, but latency with IoT is not just in this consumer model we're talking about. I mean, this is actually kind of like a big deal with, you know, major IoT systems because of battery usage and accessibility to Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. I'm curious if y'all have any kind of weird homebrew projects around the house that you kind of cobbled together. Is there anything like that? Your whole house is just cobbled together.
My whole house is a cobbled together kind of little toy playground, nice. But nothing like Adreno based. I haven't gotten down to that level of getting like a Raspberry Pi and hooking that up to my TV and seeing if that works. But
I've been trying to get a basically what I wanted to do is I wanted to get my calendar and hook it up to a very, very small, tiny projector and be able to project that onto a wall so I can see it. It's not exactly Internet of Things, but I wanted the projector to be hooked up to an Arduino of some kind, a Raspberry Pi, and it automatically connects to the internet and gets my calendar for the day, and it tells me what it is.
That'd be nice. So you need a rendering thing, though. So what would render it? Like you need a whole OS to spin up a...
Yeah, so you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Raspberry Pis do give you the ability to put OSs on there.
Oh, yeah. Nice. I guess I've heard of like Windows IoT, and then I guess like Raspberry Pi is like a Linux kind of distribution, right?
Yep, exactly.
At the CodePen offices here, I wanted not a calendar, but this would be the same thing. It was we have this URL on CodePen, codepen.io/TV, and it just randomizes awesome pens, you know, to look at full screen. And so I wanted to like, that'd be great in the office. We should just have a huge TV but I jumped right to TV. You know, we could have been projector, who knows what. But then I was like, how do you get like a web browser on a TV that's like good? You know, like even web browser if a TV has a web browser, it probably is kind of sucky, you know?
Plus, yeah, so can I make a CodePen stick, like a Amazon Fire stick? Is that?
Yeah. Well, I bought a Windows stick, one of those like Intel, I don't know.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And so it has Windows 10 on it or what, I don't even know what Windows world is, but it was trivial to use. And it's just sticks in the USB or a HDMI slot in the back. And it has, you know, it has Bluetooth on it and stuff. So I have a mouse and keyboard for it sitting on the table and just fire up Edge and go to CodePen TV and then do the full screen mode. And then we were able to set both Windows and the TV to be like energy inefficient mode, like never turn off under any circumstances. And it works. Good. Great. It was pretty cheap because TVs these days, oh my God, if you spend $600 on a TV, it's like you get like an incredible TV these days. It's amazing.
Yep. Yep.
So, I mean, I've never worked with the window stick, but is this similar to like Chromecasting that you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, but Chrome, yeah, I guess, because a Chromecast is also a little HDMI jabber, isn't it? Yeah.
But the Windows stick is like the full OS. It's a full computer in the...
Yeah, whereas stick. Chrome is just... A,
oh, I see what you're saying.
Chrome, okay. I don't think the Chrome stick has Chrome on it. You just can blast stuff from another computer to it.
Chrome browser, right? Yeah, you have to have another device that controls it, but no, that isn't.
This is totally standalone.
Okay, Windows wins that one.
Yeah, and it was like the Windows stick was only $100 or something, which is pretty wild.
I like this calendar projector idea too. I you know, Apple's not going to make you a calendar projector, so you might as well just, hey, I'm going to make my own. So that's fun.
Well, the reason I thought of that was because we have a calendar, a physical calendar in our house, and I have three children, so their schedule is on there, my wife's schedule is on there, mine's on there, and sometimes the days are so mixed up, it's illegible. So I would love to be able to put everybody's events on different Google calendars and be able to open that up and say, okay, just show me my daughter's calendar events for today, or mine, or everybody's, so we can coordinate.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Right. I like that's that. Patented also.
And this idea is trademarked as a future Spheria product.
All ideas on this podcast are trademarked, I believe. I think every listener out there knows and respects that. All right. I guess thank you all so much for coming on. I know my interest has peaked. I have a little like Arduino Spark Fun kit or something in a drawer here. And I just like, well, maybe I should take it out and play with it. So thank you all so much for coming on the show and talking about it. But for we'll go around. But for people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? We'll start with Dale.
Well, following me, I mean, I'm on the Twitters as another UI guy. And for as far as giving me money, I mean, you know, I work with Kianush at Spheria. And, you know, if there's anything in the front end dev or IoT space you guys want to talk about, I mean, feel free to look us up in the Boston area or on the internets.
All right, Kianush?
Yeah, I'm on the Twitters also as Kianush P. Very boring. And Spheria is on there also as Spheria Digital. We're happy to, we're excited about fun projects and fun ideas and things like that. So if you have fun projects and ideas and need help just brainstorming and talking about it, we're happy to help.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you all so much for coming on, and thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. You see your podcatcher's internet enabled and it connects to the internet. Okay. If you want to follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of internet tweets a month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs because people want to hire people like you. There may be even IoT jobs there. Who knows? Chris. You got anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, shoptalkshow.com.